Well, the Sadras movement is really the movement of Muqtada al-Sadr, and he is the son of a former Grand Ayatollah, a significant and very senior figure in the Shia religious establishment in Iraq, who was taken out in 1999, most probably by the Ba'athist Party. And with the fall of his father, he became a sort of significant... He sort of inherited his father's legacy and became kind of a significant figure in and of his own right. But he really, at that point at least, lacked any legitimacy or religious credentials of his own. But with the fall of the former regime and the invasion and then occupation of Iraq from 2003 onwards, he's been able to use these events to generate his own kind of publicity machine, if you like. And this machine is multifaceted. It has a political wing. It has a media wing, a very well-established media wing, in fact, responsible for a couple of different newspapers in Iraq. And also it has a military wing. And the military wing is the Mahdi Army.
In their recent war, what is the impact that the Mahdi Army and the Sadras movements had on Iraq?
Well, they have played a significant role in post 2003 Iraq. In terms of the role of the Mahdi Army specifically, they've been involved in all kinds of resistance movements, all kinds of anti-occupation movements. This has included military aggression directly against the US and also directly against the Iraqi government and its security forces. These were regular and ongoing for a number of years. It wasn't really until sort of 2007, then into 2008, that the Iraqi army had enough kind of momentum and broad support and the kind of institutional and military facilities in order to be able to take them on, that the Mahdi army really started to take a back seat from there. And also, it's quite interesting because at that point it begins to evolve as a movement as well. The Mahdi army and the broader Sadras movement evolved in terms of its rhetoric and started to talk about social inclusion, started to talk more about democracy, started to talk more about bringing Iraqis together, and also started to work more as a kind of charitable organization, in a sense. The part of Baghdad that is called Sadr City is one of the poorest parts of Iraq. And it's a high Shia population, and that's where he gets his power base. Part of the reason he has this power base is because he provides services that the government can't. He gets in amongst the people, and he gets his faction in amongst the people, providing many of the services that the government has abjectly failed to provide since 2003. And this is what's given him such credibility. So the role of the Mahdi Army since 2003 has been a very significant one.
So the Sadras movement won quite a few seats in the Iraqi election last
year.
That's
right.
Obviously, you've just described who's supporting them and what they're actually doing. What sort of presence do they have in the government at the moment? Do they hold any ministerial seats? Are they ministers within the government? Are they likely to gain further support and in future elections, do you think?
I mean, they hold a significant percentage of the votes. I think there's 325 seats, and they hold about 40 of them. So they hold a significant percentage, given that they're sort of, could be considered a kind of fringe faction in some quarters of Iraq, at least. They hold significant sway. And part of the reason that they hold such significant sway is because, as I said, their movement's very popular in certain quarters of Baghdad because it provides services. Also, a lot of people are very frightened of them. And this also is bringing Muqtada al-Sadr a degree of popularity perhaps beyond what he really really has in Iraq. And it's also giving him a degree of influence because now there was a big impasse that followed last year's election in March of 2010 that lasted about, 9 or 10 months. And throughout this time, all of the different factions in Iraq had to negotiate with Muqtada al-Sadr. This means that elements within the Iraqi government So, for example, Nouri al-Maliki's State of Law Coalition, that only the year before was fighting a bitter battle against Muqtada al-Sadr, now had to negotiate with him. And this is the awkward situation that the Iraqi government finds itself in. They've got this fringe figure who's got this varied kind of political and military backing, who is quite popular in some quarters of the country and has received perhaps unwarranted degrees of power. And now, given the political stalemate and the awkwardness of Iraqi politics, they have to engage with this guy, and they have to take anything he says seriously, because he has 40 seats, because he can influence the way that the government acts moving forwards.
So you mentioned there, you were touching on the fear of people, of the Sadr's movement. What sort of fear do the Iraqis feel for this man and his movement, and how are they creating that fear?
Well, I think if you asked 100 different Iraqis, you'd get 100 different opinions. I think that some people are very, very, as I said, fearful of him and concerned about the kind of rhetoric he employs, the kind of military stronghold he has in certain quarters, his ability to call up, you know, numbers of people and supporters at his whim. I think other people have some empathy with him, particularly in his anti-occupation stance, in his distaste for the foreign occupation of Iraq, and on the kind of pressure that he does exert over the Iraqi government. I mean, not all of the pressure that he exerts there and not all of the influence that he has been negative. He has been able to pressure them in certain ways that some people in Iraq may see as a good thing. So in terms of the fear that he can muster, I think that fear, you know, it can be seen across the board. He is capable of doing remarkable things in the past in a very, very short amount of time. And it's that kind of power and unwielding. You know, no one really is, he's not really kept in check by anything or anyone. So it's that kind of power that does cause fear. And it's also the fact that, you know, his militia have done some terrible things. I mean, they've broken into people's houses in the middle of the night and stolen people away, never to be seen again.
In terms of that, and obviously he's wielding a lot of influence in all sorts of different spheres of Iraq, as you're describing. I mean, the US has plans to withdraw its troops from Iraq by the end of next year.
This year.
So in terms of that, there'll obviously be possibly a security vacuum of sorts. I mean, do you think Muqtada al-Sadr is going to capitalise on that and try and increase his sphere of influence? And, you know, why is this why they're reported to be returning now, do you think?
Yes, well, of course, that's exactly right. The US is due to withdraw at the end of this year. We are all pretty certain at this point that that's going to cause some kind of political vacuum, into which various forces will no doubt try to exert their will and their influence. Muqtada al-Sadr is definitely one of those. This year he's already visited Iraq a couple of times. I should say at this point that he actually currently resides in Iran. He's completing his religious education at a seminary in Qom in Iran. And, you know, this in and of itself is a significant development because it alludes to two things. One, the Iranian influence over Muqtada al-Sadr and his militia, and that influence is very strong. And secondly, the reason that he's trying to complete his religious education is because once he does, he himself will achieve a higher status within sort of the Shia religiosity. And once he does so, eventually he'll be able to issue fatwas, which are direct religious edicts to Shia people, to his followers. So he is positioning himself. The other grand Ayatollah, Ali al-Sistani, who's in Iraq, is about 87 years old. So, of course, he is not long for this world, one might say. And Muqtada al-Sadr has very cleverly, I think, seen that, and has recognised that by completing his religious education and by further encouraging his Iranian connections, he will have, and also the fact that he won 40 seats in last year's election, will mean that with this power vacuum coming, he's going to bring himself into an unprecedented degree of power, and we are yet to see exactly how he's going to use that power. One would have to say that given his track record, it's not going to be all good.
Do you think there's anybody within Iraq at the moment that has the ability or the power base to stand up against this man and stop him in his tracks, perhaps?
Well, really, the only element that could do that is the Iraqi government. The Iraqi government has thus far been, well, at least since the sort of battles that they fought in 2008, has in this kind of new round of Muqtada al-Sadr's assertion of his power and influence been fairly reserved in combating it. So this is a big question hanging over someone like Nouri al-Maliki, how he deals with the Sadrist movement as the US withdraw. Is going to be a big question. The other big faction that has a lot of credible power over within Iraq is that of Iyad Alawi, the Al-Iraqiya political party. And, you know, they too wield a lot of influence and try to assert a more, let's say, neutral or secular and inclusive doctrine. And certainly those two represent major blocks, as do the Kurds. The Kurds are a power unto themselves. Muqtada al-Sadr has made no inroads there, and I doubt he will anytime soon. There are a number of significant political and military factions within Iraq that would be capable of dealing with him if they were to confront him in an all-out attack. It's just the fact that isn't an easy thing to do. It would certainly cost a lot of lives and would be a very complicated and convoluted exercise.